Clear Victory Radio.
He's a fighter, not a lover.
When you dance with Daddy, sometimes people get hurt. What else you got for me?
Hey, it's time for Clear Victory Radio with John Anthony Simmons and Chris Buck. We have the Patriot pastor Garrett Lear on the program.
I'm with you, baby.
And please note that the views expressed in this program are those of the individuals who speak them and not necessarily of Portsmouth Community Radio, its board of trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. I got something else for you, John Anthony. Are you a local? This is a sponsor. Are you a local business that would like to support local community radio? WSCA offers underwriting packages to businesses in the greater Portsmouth area. Underwriting on WSCA allows your business to stand out on the air for our listeners, who will remember that you supported their community radio station. If you'd like more information, send an email to underwriting@wscafm.org.
Hey, any of us who have traveled in the South and like hot ribs, and I'm not one of those guys because it upsets my little tummy. Garrett Lear, the Patriot pastor, is in studio with us. He's one of our guests. This is the guy who has Tabasco sauce on his eggs and thinks nothing of it. So we got all kinds of ranges on the hot, spicy spectrum here in studio. But anyway, my point being is if you've traveled in the South, there's an expression called slap your mama hot, right?
Really?
Yeah.
I used to live in North Carolina, and I swear I never heard slap your mama hot.
Or slap your mama good. Something so good that you want to slap your mama so good, right?
Oh, I get you. I get you.
So anyway, today has been a slap your mama good day in the State House here in Concord, New Hampshire. It is a day of absolute rejoicing for so many of us that have been involved and care about a culture of life. And so we have had a slap your mama good day in state politics here today. We've also had, I dare I say, a slap John Lynch good day in New Hampshire. We have some veto overrides, some medicine that's long been since due. The people who have continuously and without any equivocation have stood in the way of a culture of life have finally seen the will of the people come through. We have on the line with us here Ellen Kolb. She is the policy director of Cornerstone Policy Research. We have in studio Garrett Lear, the Patriot pastor. Ellen, welcome to Clear Victory Radio.
Thank you, John Anthony. It's good to be here.
Patriot pastor, welcome to Clear Victory Radio.
I'll have no other king but King Jesus. You know it's me.
I know it's you now. When I hear that, I know the Patriot pastor's coming, and he brings his A-game wherever he goes. And, of course, my wingman, Chris Buck, we have a couple of announcements for you real quick. You are listening to WSCA 106.1 FM. Clear Victory Radio, and of course, as promised, it took us a while. We're Republicans and we're thrifty. We get things done, you know, in our own due time, but we now have our clearvictoryradio.org website up and running.
Yep, that's right. Go to the website, clearvictoryradio.org. We're going to have chances for our listeners, loyal listeners, to interact with us on Twitter, clearvictorynh. We also have a Facebook page. If you go on Facebook and just search for Clear Victory Radio, you'll find us, and we're going to have lots of ways, I think, John Anthony, coming up very soon for the listeners to voice their input, to suggest you know, new topics and guests, and really to be involved in this show. So I'm incredibly excited about this.
I am too. It's a great job, Chris. You didn't pay me to say this, but you did a great job with the site. I know there's much more to come. But this is going to be our interface. We're going to change the face of politics. Of course, Clear Victory Radio is all about changing the discourse in the way that we speak to each other. If we're ever going to change the results we're getting in this nation, we need to change the discourse. We need to change the discussion. We need to show people why it's so important to care about a culture of life and to get off this whole get your law off my body thing and speak to the truth in the culture of life. And Ellen, I am just so, so pleased to have you on the show, sister. You, of course, have spent a goodly portion of your life trying to protect the unborn. This is something that we as either whichever category or all or none that you fit into, but Christian, conservative, Republican, concerned parent, concerned activist, just plain old common sense participant in our government. However you're coming at this issue, it seems to me that something like parental notification should be a fairly easy slam dunk. Parents need to be involved in their lives. Of course, we've all heard the whole arguments, and they're very true, of course. If your daughter can't get an aspirin at school or can't get an ear pierced at the mall without parental involvement, why, for the love of all that is good and holy, should she be able to get an abortion without having that parental input? We have a governor, of course, who is now in his fourth term and has gotten reelected, having broken promises, and he said that he would support parental notification, and for some reason, Ellen continues to try to nuance this thing a la Barack Obama and say why he just simply couldn't put his signature on this parental notification bill. And of course, today, that veto override that was nuanced and parsed and very legalistic and very Al Gore, there is no controlling legal authority type of excuses. The legislature, both in the House and the Senate today, overrode that veto, and we're standing up on the backs of the seats and applauding loudly today, aren't we?
We sure are. If the governor had taken the time to read the bill, he would have found that his concerns had been addressed in there. But frankly, he did not want it in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, this was a campaign promise that he thought he'd never have to come through on, basically,
right.
Isn't it? Yeah,
that's absolutely right. I don't think he counted on the way so many people came together. I think it's important to remember there were 12 co-sponsors on this from different areas, with different interests, and I don't think you could get those 12 particular people to sign on to anything else altogether. This was really the fruit of a long period of reflection and research. There's just no way to make this bill more carefully written, and seeing what the House and Senate did today was really a tribute to the process that goes into well-done legislation.
Well, that's right. And, you know, Ellen, one thing that just occurred to me, you know, let's talk practical realities here for our listeners that are saying, well, my for parental notification or not, I mean, it sounds like a good idea, but how does all this work? Mm-hmm. I mean, under a parental notification law, how does a girl, and frankly, you know, those that know I am not a chauvinist, but I use my words intentionally, and we're talking about 14, 15-year-old girls, sometimes younger, that are going in and getting abortions.
Adolescents, we're not talking about adult women.
Right. How does a girl who wants to go into a Planned Parenthood to get an abortion, does she have to bring a piece of paper that's signed by her parents that's been notified, or does the parent have to come in with the girl for the abortion? How does this work as a practical reality? Because so many people seem to get stuck on this whole, well, if there's rape or incest, or if a girl wants to go to a judge and all these sorts of things. I mean, let's forget that, I don't know, certainly 5% or less of situations. I mean, for the 95%, I'll call them, of these girls, how does this work in a practical, real way?
Okay, in a practical, real way, the abortion providers themselves testified in Concord, 75% of the minors already bring a parent, and about half of the ones left bring another trusted adult. For those who do not feel comfortable bringing a parent or another trusted adult, they go to a judge. And I can tell you how that works in our neighboring state of Massachusetts. I was speaking to an employee of, a former employee of Planned Parenthood, and she knows where I'm coming from. I know where she's coming from. This was no sting. This was no gotcha. And I asked, well, how do you handle that? And she said, it's a service we provide our clients. We would pick up the girl at school. We would drive her to court. It was a very short process. We'd drive her back to school. Nobody was the wiser.
Mm. Well,
it's pretty much a routine thing.
Mm.
Now, the biggest objection, well, there were numerous objections from those who didn't like the bill, but the biggest objection, and I know that your local Senator Stiles expressed this, is that we cannot legislate communication, and this bill tends to harm an adolescent who is suffering abuse, incest, rape. And to that I say, if there's any kind of family relationship that needs state intervention, it's something like that. Mm. And without a procedure that brings girls like this in front of a judge, the crime goes unreported. And once the abortion is done, she goes right back into the situation that got her in the first place.
Well, but hold on a second, Ellen. You know, I'm a lawyer. You know, Christ said it wasn't healthy that need a doctor, right? So you'll pardon the questioner here, but I'm a lawyer. If this girl is being raped at home, and she goes before a judge and says, "I want to have an abortion, but I can't follow this law. I need you to give me this permission." I mean, under the mandatory reporting laws, I mean, somebody's up for criminal charges now, right?
That's only if someone reveals the rape and incest. Under judicial bypass, which is what our law has, the only determination the judge needs to make is she mature enough to make her own decision? whether a judge wishes to pursue that and find out, hey, why are you here instead of with a parent, is strictly up to how conscientious the judge is.
Wow.
So you see that this bill, it's not perfect. It is simply as good as we do in the real world. This is real world legislation.
Well, that's right, and we've got some real consequences for judicial appointments coming up now, don't we? I mean, you know, typically judges have gotten an absolute free pass on this issue. Now with this law on the books, there's going to have to be an inquiry when the executive council and governor are appointing judges, right?
I hope that this brings more scrutiny to the process. I think that the judiciary can only get stronger with this. And I understand that the New Hampshire judiciary is under great challenges with the financial situation.
And they are.
And nevertheless, we don't deny people their day in court for money's sake.
Right. Patriot Pastor, you've been in the trenches a long time on these issues, too. I mean, you're a father. You have two now grown women that you raised compassionately and with a respect for life. One of whom particularly had a burden for the unborn, but both of them certainly raised in a Christian way to respect life. Where are we at on this? I mean, you're not only a pastor, an activist, a statesman, but a father who's wanted to see this day come in your beloved New Hampshire for a long time. What are you feeling today as we see this override happen?
Well, even as Ellen has expressed it so well, and Ellen and I go way back to when we didn't have any gray hair, right?
And that's
Ellen?
Right.
And we've gotten a lot of gray hair on the way. And I think one of the points that Ellen brought out that needs to be reiterated is the fact that this is, even the legislation has less than ideal things for some of us, it's real world legislation in what we're facing. And it definitely puts a high bar commitment or a high bar covenant. Which we need, and of course, the people have spoken. I mean, the whole idea of our process, our governmental process, here we have a veto over the governor's signature, and that's part of the process, and we have some people out there that don't want any scrutiny at all. I mean, I remember, and Ellen remembers this, because we testified in different hearings about, for example, Planned Parenthood and the abortionaries going under some kind of medical review, and they wanted nothing. They said no. I mean, every hospital, every clinic in New Hampshire goes under some kind of review for their operation, but yet the abortion industry wanted absolutely none at all.
So I can medical records to be subpoenaed or open for inspection, that type of thing.
And basically no standards at all for cleanliness or any of those other things.
No statistical reporting either. No but that's another battle for another day, and believe me, I'll be there for it.
That's right.
So they have to eventually lose that fight too, right? I mean, Ellen, if we really take a concerted effort to make this, I mean, that's one that's going to collapse of its own weight, right?
It makes no sense to make public policy based on the statistics provided by the providers of abortion.
Right.
So Ellen, this is Chris. Maybe I'm just completely dense, but I'm trying to figure out what is the argument that's been advanced for why a young girl should not have to report obtain parental notification and go to her parents for this thing. I mean, there's got to be some reason for all this obfuscation and just the uncooperativeness of the abortion industry, which goes, I mean, I get the fact that they're an industry and they kind of want to make money. So, they're trying to.
It's an important point. They'd have to change their business model.
It's revenue, right? I mean, so that's part of it. But there's also, the people who support the industry in the legislature are fighting an ideological battle. So what is the ideological argument behind saying, well, a teenage girl should not have to report to her parents? I must be dense. I can't understand
it. The ideological argument is that abortion is a fundamental right and that it applies to a female of whatever age, anyone who is pregnant. Now, Roe goes back to 1973, and almost immediately afterwards, the first attempts to bring parents in popped up all around the country. Back in 1992, remember that's 19 years after Roe, the Supreme Court made it clear that parents have a right to be, the states have a right to have parents be involved. Ever since then, the debate has been, the right of the pregnant female versus the right of the parents. That's why these laws must be drafted so carefully, because whatever I think of the right to abort, the Supreme Court has established it. These bills are an effort to balance the rights of the minor seeking an abortion with the parents who have an interest in the medical welfare of their child.
Well, but hold on a second, Ellen, right? I mean, you got the radical left out there saying this is just a backdoor attempt at cutting down a woman's right to abort, all these other things. I mean, you know, regardless of motivation or not, and I'm not making any concessions or making any statements there,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really completely irrelevant, isn't it?
It is, because this bill can't, or this law, I love hearing.
It's okay. Get used to saying it, Ellen. You can say it now.
I love it.
Repeat it with me. It's therapeutic. Repeat it. This law.
This cannot stop a single abortion. No one has veto power over an abortion under Roe. This bill simply asserts a state interest in letting parents have a place at the table when the discussion is being had.
And any concept of parenting and stewardship of children until they become 18 has to respect this law, right?
Yes.
Well, that's when Chris brought up the question, you know, what is really motivating this? And I think the larger picture that we have to look at is maintaining families, understanding, yes, there are some pathologies out there, but let's look at the design of families. Do we want to maintain families? Do we want to maintain integrity of families? Do we want to recognize what minor children are going through, and that parents have rights in that? They have responsibilities, not just the rights. Why does the state want to abrogate the rights of the parents and take the parents out of the mix? And I think there's a real turnaround. For many years, parents have scratched their heads saying, what's the state doing to us? Why are they doing this? And we've seen in a lot of the hearings, and I'm sure Ellen can testify to that as well, we've had some tremendous turnouts of parents standing there saying, what's going on? Why are you doing this to us?
And the simple mention of the word abortion is supposed to shut us up.
Right.
Right.
And you know, unfortunately, there are people like me, there are people like the Patriot pastor who simply don't buy into that. We will not do it.
And the thing that I find remarkable, John Anthony, maybe you can speak to this as well, is you know that in the legal profession, in just about every other instance involving a child, the court has very broad discretion over finding out what's going on with the child, finding out if a parent is fit or not to parent. It's the best interest of the child standard, right? So the court can pry into a child's life in all types of regards. But in this situation, it's almost as if, I mean, this is just completely reasonable legislation. You know, it's eminently reasonable. It's allowing the court, it's allowing the state, as Ellen said, to simply assert a state interest in finding out, does the child have, consent to the parents for the abortion? And that's going to allow an investigatory process. That's going to, you know, the questions that get asked, after you ask the question, does this child have the consent of the parents, are going to find out if rape is involved, if incest is involved, if other things are involved. This gets the conversation started, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, it does, sure. I mean, you have to wonder who you're standing in front of at that point. If you're standing in front of someone who just can't wait to get the $300, $400, $500 for the abortion, I mean, that's a pretty perfunctory conversation, and they really don't care. But it does get the conversation going. I mean, like Ellen said, I mean, this is going to be, you know, what was it, 75% of parents accompany their daughter to have an abortion anyway, Ellen?
Either accompany them or provide consent.
Yeah. Now, how do they provide the consent? A phone call into the abortion provider or a note or what?
I believe that there is some written documentation. I honestly do not know if that means a phone call will do, as long as it's documented in the record. But okay. I would think that if a parent is giving consent, they would provide a signature.
And again, without record keeping regulations, I mean, we don't know, right?
That's right. Well, we are asked to depend on the good faith of the people providing the service.
Yeah.
Well,
any
other physician, any other medical provider, any other freestanding clinic providing any other service has to be very careful to dot the I's, cross the T's. We don't ask the same thing of the freestanding abortion facility.
Well, it's an industry run amok. I mean, it's important to note here, too, Ellen. I mean, this is two-thirds is required for an override.
And
I mean,
right.
For our listeners that sort of tune into us because they like you know, the sort of tenor of the discussions we have here, or for whatever reason they tune in, but really don't follow public policy a lot. I mean, getting two-thirds majority on legislation is very, very tough.
It certainly is.
That's why the bar is set that high.
Yes.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's purposeful. But I mean, to get a bridge named, the Chris Buck Memorial Bridge in Dover, sure. I mean, a two-thirds majority is really pretty easy. The Dover delegation stands up and says what a great guy Chris is, and it passes with 80% of the vote. But, I mean, to get two-thirds.
Well, I want to tell you that all the people that I contacted many reps and senators and so forth and so on, and I do that on many different issues. This issue in particular, the kind of strength with the response that came through of saying, absolutely, I will be there to veto. This has created an enormous response.
Reps were caught off guard. Senator Luther of Hollis said on the floor today that he received over 400 emails urging an override, and fewer than 10 on the other side.
All of us realize that this decision, even for an adult woman, is significant. To say that it's not like going out and getting your hair cut. It's not like going out and getting your nails done. This is significant. And of us have
not
been
only significant,
juveniles,
but
we've
traumatic.
All been adolescents.
Yeah.
And we made decisions in adolescence that later in life we realized was not a good decision. And we looked to people around us at the time to help us to make a sound decision. I think that's what we're really having to deal with here, is saying, wait a minute. Why would we want them to be just able to walk out there? Who thinks that an adolescent's going to make... And one of the representatives emailed me and said, I trust that my teenage daughter can make better decisions than my ex-wife. Mm. I couldn't believe it when I was reading this.
Once again, you're listening to WSCA Portsmouth 106.1 Clear Victory Radio. We have guest Ellen Kolb. Did I pronounce that right? Cobb?
Kolb.
Kolb. Kolb.
K-O-L-B.
All right, and Patriot Pastor Garrett Lear with us today talking about the override of the parental notification.
And you can go to our website, of course, to read more about the bios of our guests. Ellen, just a plug for Cornerstone. What's the website for Cornerstone that people can go to find out more about the parental notification involvement and so much more that you're doing over there at Cornerstone?
You can look us up at www.nhcornerstone.org.
And a wonderful group over there. You've got a firebrand named Shannon McGinley on your director's board. I tried to get out to her cookout. I thought finally Team Simmons was going to be able to do it. We had one of the small ones take sick that very day with a fever, and we just didn't feel like coughing and germing on everybody. But Shannon is wonderful, has a wonderful heart for God and for the creation of a culture of life. And we join all of you in rejoicing. This is just a team effort and a cultural thing a cultural victory here on Clear Victory Radio that we're celebrating. I do want to switch gears just a little bit because this is not the only culture of life victory today. Of course, we had the Executive Council reject $1.8 million of contract money for Planned Parenthood. And Ellen, we were talking before the show offline as I was queuing you up. This was a thing where we were actually pretty surprised at the amount of votes we have. There was a 3-2 vote, but at this point, a victory is a victory. Of course, Ray Burton and Chris Sununu were for the spending, I know both of those gentlemen, and certainly hope that they will change their minds and reconsider their positions going in the future when things like this come up. But we want to definitely.
This is a sign of things changing because Planned Parenthood has had a contract for years, and it's sort of automatically renewed because the assumption is, well, they're the only ones who can provide this particular service.
Right.
Well, guess what? Business as usual is over.
Well, that's right, and thanks to those three votes, they are Councilors Dan St. Hilaire, David Wheeler of Dan St. Hilaire of Concord, David Wheeler of Nashua, and Raymond Wazorik of Manchester. If you care about a culture of life, I need you to get on the phone tonight or get on your email and call these three gentlemen and tell them thank you for your leadership in New Hampshire. Thank you for sticking up for the culture of life. We have your back. The next time these votes come up, you let us know. We'll be there to back you. We'll be there to give you the arguments and the support you need. Thank you so much for showing real leadership.
Very important that they hear that.
And I'm sure they would love to hear your call. Again, Councilor Dan St. Hilaire of Concord, David Wheeler of Nashua, and Raymond Wazorik of Manchester. I do want to encourage our listeners also to call Raymond Burton and Chris Sununu and be very Christian-like and say, we need your support for these things in the future. We believe your vote was wrong today. We are in your district. We do vote. We want you to do the right thing and show them how respectful and courteous and dare I say, godlike that Christians can be even when they're winning. You call these two gentlemen and tell them that their vote was wrong today and that Clear Victory Radio told them to give them a call. We want them to know that people are listening, they're engaged in this conversation, and we will not stop until we have a culture of where life is respected again. And it happens right here in New Hampshire. And folks, you ought to be on your knees thanking God that you live in a state where you don't need to be big money to get things done. These are huge victories for the culture of life today, and we're praising God for it. Ellen,
amen.
Ellen, we have I'm fired up. Hey, you know, I'm only 25% Italian, Ellen, but it kicks in high gear and makes up for the rest of it. Ellen, we have about 5 minutes left on this segment. Sister, you are welcome to stay for the whole show. I don't know whether you have other commitments or not. I know you've been working very hard. Any other sort of discussions on these votes today that we missed? Any aspects of it that our listeners really need to know about?
Well, I'm going to leave the show in your good hands, but what I would say is what happened today is a tribute to people getting involved individually. Mm. The days when you could rely on your legislators, you could elect them and then forget about them, those days, if they ever existed, are over.
Yes.
Engagement is very important. The legislators respond to this. This never could have happened if people had stayed home and assumed someone else was going to get the job done.
Well, and Ellen, we appreciate so much the work you're doing there at Cornerstone in general as an organization, and you specifically. We know that this was a very big piece of the specific task that you have picked up. You rest tonight knowing that the Lord is pleased with the work you've done, and we expect that you're not going to just put that on the bucket list as check. we expect, Sister, that you're going to remain eternally vigilant and keep us notified of this stuff, and we want to have you back on, Sister. Any other topics that you want to cover in the future, you always have an open mic here at Clear Victory Radio.
Well, thank you. Pastor Lear can tell you I don't quit easily, so you'll be hearing from me.
That's
excellent.
Thanks to all of you.
God bless.
Thanks,
you.
Ellen.
Bye-bye.
So we're still in the studio with the Patriot Pastor here on WSCA Portsmouth Community Radio. And Patriot Pastor, Garrett Lear, let me ask you, you know, we couldn't have done this without a broad coalition, you know, a two-thirds supermajority override of a governor's veto is actually a pretty remarkable thing. And, you know, I don't think or suspect, and maybe you can clarify, that all of those people who voted today would self-identify as, you know, social conservatives. Some of them would be in the more libertarian camp. Some of them perhaps even more moderate. So this had broad support. Are we seeing the beginning of a coalition that's going to move forward to start overriding the governor's vetoes?
I think what we're seeing is more the sensitivity to the representatives to recognize who put them there. Mm. You know, the first three words of the preamble to the United States Constitution are, we the people.
Right.
And, you know, there's been a great change in the State House, and I've been working up there for the last 20 years, give or take, and I've seen a change in this legislative session where people are not looking as if they're our rulers, they're looking at being our servants. And so what Ellen said earlier was important, that people getting involved and letting their will be known to their representatives has made a change. And so I think this does speak of an ongoing coalition of people saying, you know what, the people have contacted us, this is what they have asked us to do. And I heard two of our younger legislators in an argument with one of the state senators. And both of them looked at him, and this is a pretty powerful guy, and they said to him, well, Senator, we're sorry that you're upset with us, but we had a mandate from the people when they sent us up here this year, and we're going to do what the people sent us up here to do.
Well, and I think
I was thrilled.
Yeah, amen to that, and amen to people with backbone. It's time for our halftime break, and we have a speech that I think you really need to hear. If today heartens you that these things happen, know that it's not accidental. Know that there are Patriot pastors on the battlefield. Know that there are Ellen Kolbs. Know that fill in your blank there listening to Clear Victory Radio today. Know that there are people like you who will not let their country be taken by people who, with tyrannical minds and who don't respect our Constitution. And I want to let you know that there's only one speech that you need to hear right now, and here it is.
Where is thy salute for presenting yourselves on this battlefield? I give you thanks. This is our army. To join it, you give homage.
I give homage to Scotland. And if this is your army, why does it go?
We didn't come here to fight for them.
Home! The English are too many.
Scotland! I am William Wallace.
William Wallace is 7 feet tall.
Yes, I've heard. He kills men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arse. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight?
Fight against that? No! We will run!
And we will live. Die. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to train all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Well, if ever there was a time when we need to think about what we're going to do in defiance of tyranny, these are the days, brothers and sisters. You're listening to Clear Victory Radio. I'm your host, John Anthony Simmons. We are going to bring to you the forecast. Got one word for you. Rain. All right. That's tonight, Friday and Saturday. And as typical, we've been having poor weather in the late week, and Saturdays and Sundays seem to be sunny. So, you know, it'll be a nice sunny day to have a nap in the hammock as a dad. Community Calendar, the Music Hall in Portsmouth is hosting historical behind-the-scenes tour of the Historic Theater. These take place on alternate Wednesdays at 5:30 p.m. through September, running approximately 75 minutes. The tour includes visits to the backstage area, the antique front of house dating to 1875, and the lobby, renovated in 2008. Arranged and guided by Music Hall historian Zanna Morris, the theater's production manager, the tour paints a full picture of the history of the theater, includes the tales of sailors who rigged the theater in the late 19th century, its flashy and famous owners, and stars across three centuries, held on the following Wednesdays at 5:30 p.m., June 29, July 13, July 27, August 10, 24, and September 7 and 21. Tour tickets can be purchased in advance at themusichall.org or at 436-2400 or on the day of the tour at the theater box office, 28 Chestnut Street in Portsmouth. Chris Buck, you have been practicing during the halftime, the Braveheart speech. You're going to go up there to City Hall
Yes.
In Dover tonight and give them the Braveheart speech.
I've memorized every word.
And get them pumped up, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, on a very, you know, we talked about real legislation, real life legislation in the first segment. Of course, the parental notification veto by Governor Lynch has been overridden. And we talked about that being real life legislation. A real life piece of legislation, of course, was this, the Dover City Charter that has a tax cap in it. And lo and behold,
right.
I don't want to steal your thunder, but that has been sort of unofficially written out of the Dover City Charter, or at least allegedly or attemptedly, if that's even a word. And guys like you say, hey, whoa, not so fast. We've had a vote. We have this part of our charter. And, you know, lo and behold, I opened up the apparently we have to have coffee more often, brother.
We should.
I opened up to page A3 today, and you filed a lawsuit on behalf of a group in Stratford Superior Court saying, not so fast. This is my government. This is on the books. And we demand it. So give us a quick spiel about that, because we know you got to bolt out of here to get up to a meeting.
Right. Yeah, I have to get up to Dover City Council to basically ask them to postpone this vote, which is completely ill-advised. But what happened was, I'm glad you used the word unofficially, because it couldn't have been more unofficial the way the city attorney in Dover decided to amend the city charter. As you know, John Anthony, in 2007, the voters of Dover went to the polls, and they voted for a tax cap, and that tax cap language was put into the Dover City Charter. Well, my clients, within the last month, went on the Dover City website, looked up the city charter, and lo and behold, the language relating to the tax cap that the voters had adopted was conspicuously missing from the city charter. It was just gone. And there was a editorial note that said, well, because of a Supreme Court ruling, the language was no longer applicable. So, you know, this is, you know, shadow government kind of stuff. I mean, this is just absolutely, it couldn't be more outside the realm of legitimacy. And what we did was I represent three clients in Dover, and we're suing the Dover City Council, the City of Dover and the Dover City Attorney, rather. And we want the city to put back the original language that the voters adopted, and we want a declaration by the court that the Dover City Attorney cannot amend the Constitution without A, a court order, or B, a positive referendum vote by the residents of Dover. And that's not, you know, call me radical. If that's radical, then I'm a radical.
That's what I was just about to say. You stole the word out of my mouth. This isn't radical stuff.
Right.
This is, hey, we live in a representative republic. We elect people to do things a certain way. This is a due process thing. This isn't even a substantive rights thing, really, necessarily. And we all know that there's a reason that people wanted that. I mean, there was a substantive reason. But, I mean, this isn't radical stuff, man. You're just calling, two people who woke up one day after coffee break and said, I'm just going to hit delete on the city charter. You're saying, whoa, not so fast. There's a way to do things in this nation and in our state, and this isn't it. And either you do it the right way, one of two ways. Either have a judge say, yep, the Supreme Court decision filed previously actually applies to Dover, too, and there you lose. I mean, this isn't even necessarily about winning. It's about doing it the right way, right?
Right,
I mean,
right.
as a first blush.
Right. A lot of it is about procedure. It's about, you know, what is the responsibility of the city attorney? Does the city attorney have the authority to amend the city charter without a vote of the people or a court order? And so we're focusing on that process. The other thing is that anybody out there who cares about tax caps, you know, really ought to be following this issue. This is going to be a big issue for the Seacoast, for Dover. We're going to be discussing the Manchester, the Supreme Court ruling that dealt with the Manchester tax cap. This is about tax caps. That's really what the underlying issue is.
Yeah, and Chris, I want to do you one better, too. This isn't just about tax caps. This is about people sitting at home and saying, well, I don't care about tax caps. I've got enough money, or the politicians only steal my money anyway. What am I going to do about it? No, this is about the fact that Dover City Manager J. Michael Joyle and Mayor Scott Myers decided one day they and they alone improperly were going to change the city charter. And if you think that the tax cap is the boundary that they're going to respect and they're never going to do it again, let me tell you, folks of Dover, you're nuts. If they think they can do this, any number of issues are next. And you need to stand up. You need to get Chris Bucks back. These gentlemen, David Scott, Ed Blyler, and Don Medbury, you need to have their backs. These are the tip of the sword. You need to back them up, and great things will happen in the city of Dover, just like they happened in Concord today. We're going to take this nation back, folks. We're all waking up, aren't we? We're all understanding that there's an agenda afoot that doesn't involve you, doesn't involve respecting your constitutional rights, doesn't involve respecting your property rights, and involves blowing over your tax dollars and saying, no, we can't cap your tax dollar, your property taxes. We need that open blank check. which, of course, is what's run this country amok in America, isn't it, Chris?
That's absolutely true, and I second all of that. We need to start taking back our country community by community. And a tax cap that's been voted on by the people of Dover by a referendum. I mean, they had to go there on you know, in November of 2007, and they had to go and they had to, you know, cast a ballot. And a majority of the voters on that day in November cast a ballot saying this is how we want to self-govern. Once you have administrators like city attorneys and then the mayor and the city manager, once you have people who decide that the will of the voters no longer matters, I mean, what's the point of any of this?
Well, and I don't know these gentlemen particularly. I mean, I've called them out, J. Michael Joyle and Mayor Scott Myers. I don't know these gentlemen personally. It's not about them personally. It's about the fact that we are not a respecter of people in this nation. We are a respecter of office. We did not create kingships, theocracies. And by the way, Chris, if you read the news surrounding the Cashin versus City of Manchester lawsuit, you will see politicians saying, no, you can't shackle me. You can't tell me there's a limit to my power and to my money-grubbing technique. You can't tell me that I can't hand out political favors through your money. You can't tell me that I can't buy off political constituencies with your money. This is what's at stake here. I mean, the unions figured this out a long time ago. There's a movement in our nation right now. We're really coming to grips with this. We need to draw a line in the sand. I know you got to get out of here. I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds, but I want to let our listeners know to Google the Cashin v. City of Manchester news coverage and to read the website. And, Chris, I'm going to ask that you put that up on the website for our listeners.
Yeah, that's great.
And keep them posted and put the meeting minutes for the Dover City meetings that cover this.
Sure.
Folks, you need to wake up. Chris, I'll give you 20 seconds because I know you got to get out of here, and we've got about an hour's show to squeeze in here with the Patriot Pastor in 20 minutes.
Right. So I invite anybody who's interested in this issue to, as you said, John Anthony, Google Cashin v. City of Manchester. The basic argument here is that Supreme Court decision simply invalidated a Manchester tax cap. It remains an open question of law whether or not that Supreme Court decision applies to Dover. And the basic argument that I'm going to go make before the City Council today or later tonight is that we do not want a single attorney, city attorney, an unelected attorney, and somebody who potentially could get the interpretation wrong, deciding what is the interpretation of the New Hampshire Supreme Court. It's unconstitutional, it's wrong, it's illegal, and we'll have more information on our website, clearvictoryradio.org.
Chris Buck, good luck to you tonight. You get up there and you crack some skulls and you tell them if they're not going to listen, you're getting Simmons in on the next meeting.
All right, buddy.
All right, man. All right,
thanks, guys.
Good luck to you.
Chris.
Nice to see you too, Chris.
All right, folks. Boy, I'm fired up tonight. I don't know if I had something for lunch that got in my belly, or maybe it was that cannoli I had.
You had a cannoli.
But anyway, I'm fired up. You know, a victory will do that for you, won't it, Garrett? It really puts a wind in your sail and says, hey, wait a minute. You know, all this toil is worth it.
Winning is better than losing, and especially when the stakes that we're talking about are so precious.
Well, and as we saw at halftime, I'm looking down at the computer, the YouTube video, once you get to the end of the Braveheart speech, shows all the guys mooning the opposition soldiers. But that's the speech, right? You know, this is about in defiance of tyranny. You know, and he calls them, he says, free men you are, and what will you do as you lie in your bed? What will you trade in from this moment forward? And that's what this is about, Pastor. And we, you know, this is the last time we're going to talk to you before the 4th of July. This, of course, the celebration of the Declaration of Independence and the birth of a nation upon which all these principles stood. And we were talking about this earlier, and we talked about, you know, it's not only just saying, hey, we're free of you, but you had to build a new nation. And, of course, you had the Articles of Confederation not really a failed experiment, but as sort of step one that eventually led to the Constitution. You know, but it's not enough just to want freedom. You have to build freedom, and you have to know where you're anchored, Pastor. And there were so many patriots that spilled their blood in that interim time, of course, after the Declaration of Independence. Then came the War for American Independence. There was a lot of work to be done. Help us celebrate our independence here with 17 minutes left, and give us a word of encouragement for the birth of our nation here as we get ready to celebrate good hot dogs and hamburgers,
sure.
But this is a celebration for our nation, and I've really come in later years in life to understand that this isn't an excuse for a long weekend. This is real. We must celebrate our way of life here.
Well, I can tell you that our founding fathers quoted very liberally from the Bible, And they quoted, for example, Psalm 33:12 that said, "Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord, and the people whom he hath chosen for his own inheritance." They also quoted Psalm 127:1 that said, "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain." And so the history of the American people, and of course we are in this time period from Patriots Day in April all the way through the 4th of July and so forth. And incidentally, for our listeners on 106.1 FM, WSCA, did you know that actually over this last couple of weeks we had a celebration, for example, of the birth of the United States Army, which was on June 14, 1775, when General Washington was appointed Commander-in-Chief of the new army. And of course, we also had in June 14, 1777, we had the Betsy Ross Stars and Stripe flag adopted by the Continental Congress. And of course, and this for New Hampshire folks, we had on June 17th, last Friday, commemorating from 1775, the Battle of Bunker Hill. And who was the hero of the Battle of Bunker Hill? It was Major General John Stark, coming from New Hampshire. So we have so much history. And when you think about, for example, also picking a national symbol on June 20th in 1782, we picked the bald eagle with outspread wings. And what do they believe about the bald eagle? Long life, great strength, majestic looks. It was then believed to only exist on the North American continent. So we have so much rich history in our country that people are not looking at. And incidentally, when William Wallace said what he did, maybe he got through to Thomas Jefferson, because Thomas Jefferson later said that disobedience to tyrants is obedience to God.
Oh, man, I love
it. Can you imagine that? And John?
And these aren't radicals. I mean, these were the mainstream leader statesmen of our day.
That's right. And see, I've had people say, well, those people that signed the Declaration of American Independence, they were a bunch of whack jobs, and they were this and they were that. I said, excuse me. Name one of them on there that was not in some form or another in clergy, in business, in education, in government, both then and later. These were some of the most astounding people that we've had on our continent.
Well, they didn't force themselves into a position of leadership. These were the leading men of their states who were chosen by their state delegations to go to Philadelphia and figure things out, right? I mean, these guys didn't just show up in Philly and say, I'm the richest guy, I'm going to park my carriage over here and have a seat at the table. These people were sent by their own states as the trusted top men of their states.
That's right. And I can tell you that that document that they put together, which a lot of people say, well, Thomas Jefferson wrote it, in a sense, he was the scribe for it. But there was actually a committee that came together to write it.
Madison?
Madison. It was John Adams.
Adams, I'm sorry.
Also Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah.
Roger Sherman, and also one of the others that were there from Robert Livingston from New Jersey, who didn't get his signature later on the Declaration, but he was considered one of the signers. And so as these people worked together in the writing of this document, it was not an easy thing to do. People said, well, we should put this in, we should put that in. So they came to the consensus of the most important things. This is one of the most precious documents in the history of the world, because for once people understood that governments are formed to protect the rights that they have been given.
Protect them, not hand them out.
Not hand them out, because they said in the document, as most people cannot recite today, and by the way, even the person that is in the White House has misquoted it 7 times. I can't believe
which person
that.
In the White House? You mean the person in the White House, right?
Yeah, okay. I was trying to avoid that a little bit. But what did they say? That we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, listen up, everyone, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. So when people say, well, we have government gives us rights. No, government is formed to secure those rights. I challenge everybody as we're getting towards the 4th of July, when you have your parties, and by the way, we were told actually by John Quincy Adams, our sixth president, and others, that there was a certain way that we should celebrate this special time of year, this special commemoration. We do some of the things. We have the parades. We have the fireworks.
Yep.
We have the food and so forth and so on. But they said that it should be celebrated basically as almost like a religious holiday.
Yeah.
Because I think many
Americans... A festive one, but in the spirit of a religious holiday.
Right, because...
Do you have a quote for that?
Yes, actually, I'm quoting it right there. And it was to be a day of deliverance, known as a day of deliverance. Because remember, we may look at that document now that has been sent off to the Smithsonian Institute and so forth and so on, or is held in the Library of Congress for people to look at. But remember, the people that signed it signed their death warrant.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately by signing it, they became traitors to the crown of England. They made the statement, we will have no other king but King Jesus, no more kings for this continent. They said, we will have not Rex Lex, we will have Lex Rex. The law is king, not the king is law. And see, that was unique in all the world. And so people today don't understand how unique that is and how important that is. Because without those understandings of what that document says, and I would challenge anybody today to look at the document, read it, and see that many of the things that were happening, and John, when you were mentioning about certain tyrannies that happening in Dover and whatever else, is because people are forgetting the fact that we do not have a king. We don't have an oligarchy. We have a Republican form of government and the consent of the government. When I say Republican, I hope everyone understands that I'm not talking about a party. I'm talking about a republic, constitutional republic, with democratic principles. And so...
Small d on that one, too.
That's right. And so the whole issue is, if we're not willing to do our part, to take our responsibilities, then what is going to happen to this republic? And I can tell you, our founding fathers got it right. Maybe it's time for us to remember to get it right. I mean, it's time that we got it right. And remember that America, in many ways, is being hijacked. You know, I gave a little talk recently on American exceptionalism. Now, some people get very upset about that. Well, you know that it wasn't even an American that came up with the phrase American exceptionalism? It was a Frenchman. In 1838, Alexis de Tocqueville, who was paid to come over here and find out why America was so strong. And he said, I've crossed this country. He went, he spent 9 months here. He went as far west as Michigan and as far south as New Orleans. And he said, America is strong because America's good. When America ceases to be good, America will cease to be strong. And that quote from John Adams, incidentally, the Declaration of Independence will be the most memorable epic in the history of America. I'm apt to believe that it will be celebrated by succeeding generations as the great anniversary festival. It ought to be commemorated as the Day of Deliverance. By solemn acts of devotion to God Almighty, it ought to be celebrated with pomp and parade, with shows, games, sports, guns, bells, bonfires, and illumination from one end of the continent to the other, from this time forward forevermore. And so, you can see what they believed. And remember, it cost them blood, sweat, and tears. Later,
lot of each.
That's right. John Quincy Adams, our sixth president, who certainly understood this, he said, you will never know, posterity, what it cost my generations for your freedom. You can study music and mathematics, and you can study porcelain and art because of what we went through. And so I hope that what we're getting through to the people here in New Hampshire and throughout the country is... appreciate what you have been given. It's unique in all the world. And by the way, as we lead from the Declaration to that period where after we became a sovereign country, a free republic, now what do? We have no navy of our own. We have very little holdings that we need. We have a governmental system that mostly was dependent on the king and the parliament. Yes, we had some colonial things in place, but we had to come up with the Articles of Confederation. And that turned out to be somewhat, in some people's estimation, not quite adequate for the growing colonies or growing states and for the growing republic. And so they came together and they formed this Constitution, which, incidentally, yesterday was the first day of spring. excuse me, the last day of spring and the first day of summer.
Right.
And it was also the first day that the United States Constitution was put into effect in 1788. It was actually ratified September 17, 1787, but it took until June 21 to 1788 to put it into effect. And we are, believe it or not, one of the countries that has had a constitution the longest of any country of the world.
That's right.
And why is that? Because we have been the freest people the world has ever known. And what has happened in America, and they said this on Lexington Green, the Battle of Lexington, April 19, 1775, it's been said that the cause of America is the cause of mankind, the cause of the world. Mm. And I believe very much with all my heart that it is. Now, does that mean that America's always been perfect? Of course it doesn't. But what it does mean is that people across this world have really looked into how important what we have done. So I'm going to challenge everybody out there. Will you do this for the Patriot Pastor, please? With 4th of July coming up, read the Declaration of Independence. It'll take you 8 minutes to do it at your party.
That's right. We've got 4 minutes left, 2 minutes and 10 seconds of which I need to play a clip, Pastor. About a minute and 30 left. What else you got for me, brother? I love it. I could just throw the switch and for 5 hours talk about this stuff. You're a wonderful voice for this type of thing.
Well, I just want to say that people can make a change. When Chris mentioned about the grassroots movement, there's a lot of things we can't change in Washington right now. But what we can change is at your house this year, you can teach your children, you can teach your grandchildren what it is to be an American. And by the way, I want to leave this with you. I am not ashamed to say I am an American. All American made, all American parts. I love my native land.
Well, certainly nobody's going to question you, your loyalty there, Pastor. We've got a couple-minute clip and maybe 30 seconds of lightning round at the end, but I wanted to play this for our listeners as well.
Barely a week ago, I heard you rail for 2 hours about independence.
And?
Mr. Hardwick, how many times have I heard you speak of freedom at my father's table? Half the men in this church, including you, Father, and you, Reverend, are as ardent patriots as I. Will you now, when you are needed most, stop at only words? Is that the sort of men you are? I ask only that you act upon the beliefs of which you have so strongly spoken and in which you so strongly believe.
Who's with us?
All you're hearing in the quietness and in the still moments there are times in our lives where we have to decide when we're going to stand up. And as you see each man leave the pew there, by the way, at the strong encouragement of a godly woman and a woman who loved her country, gentlemen, shall we always, men and women, stand up so boldly. Pastor, we have about 45 seconds left. Let's go through some of the best memories for you. By the time I get done asking the question, you'll have about 40 seconds. Some of your best memories of how we celebrated when you were a boy.
Is seeing veterans of all the different wars marching in the 4th of July parade and seeing the American flag pass by. And I'm sorry, folks, I can't help it. I got to cry when I say this. Mm. And hearing, "My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty."
Amen.
And I still believe it. And I'm still willing to live and die for those truths. like many of my ancestors did, and I have the proud honor now as an adult to march in the parades and represent the veterans of the American Revolution.
Well, Pastor, we're never going to take points off for passion. That's it for Clear Victory Radio. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Clear Victory Radio.